Nation.
Ladies and gentlemen of Lafayette,
the Hammered Down Show with Jared Jussolaitis is Lafayette's number one sports show.
Yes, I'm excited!
He totally went to Jared.
The voice of Lafayette sports.
The cream of the crop! Nobody does it better.
Send us your thoughts on the text line at 765-447-4080.
Now go do that voodoo that you do so well!
Changes, and what's the staff been up to as of late as we get ready for spring ball? So we're going to talk with him a little bit here, so hang tight. He's up in about 14 minutes. Don't want to miss out. Tom's always great when he's on the program, man. I'll tell you what. So Tom coming up in a little bit, plus we just got our Big Ten end-of-season awards list. Oh, my goodness. Let's talk about that more. Need-to-know news.
Here's your need-to-know news.
All right, they are out. It is your Big Ten end of the year winners. Player of the year, shocker, Zach Edey. Defensive player of the year, Ace Baldwin Jr. Okay. Co-freshman of the year, Owen Freeman from Iowa. Mackenzie Bacco for Indiana. Mason Gillis was your sixth man of the year. Matt Painter with his sixth coach of the year title. He'll share it with Fred Hoiberg of Nebraska. The Howard Moore assistant coach of the year award goes to Purdue's Brandon Brantley. Nice to see that. First team, unanimous, Boo Booey, Zach Edey. Everybody else is here to part. This is, I'm looking at the coaches one right now. Zach Edey, Boo Booey, unanimous. Marcus Domast, Terrence Shannon Jr., Braden Smith. Second team was Tyson Walker, Jameer Young, Tony Perkins, Tominaga, and AJ Storr. Third team was Ware, Sandefort, Dawson Garcia, Mast, Barnheiser, and Ace Baldwin Jr. All defensive team. Remember, this is a big thing. This is according to the coaches. Kel Ware, Brooks Barnheiser, Ace Baldwin Jr., Zach Edey, Amayuri, Chucky Hebert. That's six. So we had a tie in there. The Big Ten Sportsmanship Award winner for Purdue is Chase Martin. Okay. The media was pretty similar here. Freshman of the year, though, just strictly went to Owen Freeman. Zach Edey was your player of the year, unanimous. Coach of the year split there, too, with Hoiberg and Painter. Boo Booey, Zach Edey, unanimous. But Jameer Young in and Damask out on first team. Kel Ware made it up to second team on the media, as did Dawson Garcia. Coleman Hawkins made third team on the media. Tominaga down to third team on the media. And there you go. Big Ten Awards. Rayfield Davis is having a great week, isn't he? Really is. Luke Gaffney's 10 RBI weekend. He hit safely and scored a run in each game. Drove in a run in all four games as well. Is your Big Ten Baseball Freshman of the Week. This will be the third in his first month of play. Is that good? That sounds good. A number of guys have done, since 2011 when they introduced it, have done three. Nobody's done more than six. That's the record. Gaffney's already halfway there. And we're in a month into the season, which is crazy. Zach Edey, why not extend his streak for Big Ten Player of the Week? 12th time in his career and the very last week to win the award. E.D. averaging 24.2 points, 11.7 rebounds, 2.2 blocks, and 2 assists per game this season. He has scored at least 20 points in the last 8 games, averaging 27.1 points, 12 rebounds, 2.8 assists, and 2.1 blocks per game in that span. I'm going to go and, hold on, let me just Google this. Yeah, that's good, turns out. According to multiple reports, Atlanta agrees to a 3-year deal with former Bears wide receiver Darnell Mooney. They say he's going to get $39 million with $26 million fully guaranteed. Luka with a triple-double to lift the Mavs over the Bulls last night, 127-92. Tonight, Pacers will head into Oklahoma City to take on the Thunder as 6.5-point dogs against the Thunder on the road tonight. So, best of luck to the Pacers. And tonight, it's a pick'em game in Chicago where the Blackhawks are hosting the Ducks. Anaheim have given up 6 goals in each of their last 2 games. And that's kind of where I'm leading tonight on the betting card. Now, last night, we took Arkansas State, +5.5. And James Madison shot 62%. Absolutely waxed in the final. 62%! We knew the defense wasn't tremendous, but holy smokes! On a neutral court, 62%! This conference tournament stuff is tough. So forget it. I'm going to go to hockey tonight. Darn it, I gotta believe in the Chicago Blackhawks to give up some goals. And I also have belief that the Anaheim Ducks will give up some goals. Over-under sitting at 5.5-6. And I like the over tonight. John Gibson in goal for the Ducks tonight. Below 90% save percentage across 40 appearances. Ducks lead the league in penalty minutes, and their penalty kill is at 75%. Not good. Meanwhile, the Hawks have got 2 wins over the last 3 games. They just put up 7 goals against Arizona. Bedard's been pretty good since coming back from the broken jaw, 13 points in 12 games. And Atizu skated this morning. Tyler Johnson skated. Taylor Radish skated. 15 games since the All-Star break, Chicago has given up 3.5 goals per game per 60 minutes and have allowed 3.73 goals overall. So I'm expecting some very weak defensive play here tonight to lead to a bunch of goals. I think this is also a good spot for Bedard. He's at +150 to score a goal tonight. Over the last 20 games, the Ducks have allowed 23 power play goals. Their power play, not good either. So I don't hate a Blackhawks / Bedard play here, too. If you want to get crazy, Bedard, Blackhawks, over 6. You could put that together. That's the lottery ticket. I like the over. And I don't mind Bedard. I don't mind the Blackhawks. Heck, I almost don't mind. You're getting 2-1 to cover the puck line for the Blackhawks. Which I know sounds crazy, but I think this is a decent place to buy low on the Blackhawks tonight. I think we're in for some goals. Yeah, I'll take the Blackhawks. They're at home. Like I said, against a team that, quite frankly, just gives up a lot of power play opportunities. I think you could be okay there. If you want to go on points, Bedard, they have not bumped him up in most books that I've seen to 1.5. So, I mean, he's -220. on a point. He's good for that, I think, but minus 220, ugh, you shouldn't be betting that. You shouldn't be. But that's where we're at tonight. I actually have a little bit of faith in the Blackhawks. We got drilled last night. Let's see if we can find some good value here in the Blackhawks. And I will take the over. Now, their first meeting, which was, I believe, back in December, it was 1-0 Blackhawks win in Chicago. Mrazek's in the goal tonight. Soderblom was going to be in. I'd be like, oh, yeah, no, definitely we're more on the puck line, but Mrazek's been terrible. Gibson's been terrible. Yeah, I think the power play gets it done tonight for Chicago, and that means we like Connor Bedard, so there you go. Those are the three legs. Play them individually. If you want to throw them into a parlay, you do so at your own risk, but I like the over tonight. You want to throw the other two in and make a parlay, you go right ahead. We're going to take a little break here. Hang tight. Coming up next, Tom Dienhart, goldandblack.com. He's our guy. He's coming up next. We'll talk a little football here with him, right? It's feeling like spring football weather out there. Let's talk to him about it. He's next. It's the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer, 101.7 The Hammer. Welcome back. It is the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com. I love having this guy on here. You read his stuff all the time over at goldenblack.com. Tremendous writer who's been known in this community for so many years. I also call him my sports spiritual advisor. Tom Dienhart is on with us. Tom, it's great to have you back on, buddy. How are you?
You too. Are you wearing your Russell Wilson jersey? That's all I want to know.
No, that's we'll work on that one there.
I order one, right?
Yeah, it's right behind my Patrick McQueen and my Bill Burr the punter jersey that I got to get for the Steelers, which I was blown away that our new punter looks exactly like comedian Bill Burr. So
that's a good thing in my book.
Yeah, well, I still got my not Tyrone Tracy. My goodness, the cornerback that I got to get.
Oh, yeah, Corey Trice.
Corey Trice, yeah. I'm still waiting on my Corey Trice jersey. Yeah, Corey Trice. Hopefully he recovers from that knee injury there and makes it back for spring ball, because he was supposed to, for the spring practices, because he was looking good, apparently, that one day that he was out there. Everybody loved him in the OTAs.
Yeah, big, long, tall kid. Good person, too. So, yeah, everybody's rooting that he can get healthy and make that roster and make some money, too.
Yeah, I would love to see that for him. And speaking of pro boilers, we just had pro day last week. I think we knew about Tyrone Tracy, that was probably Purdue's best shot. I know he did a little bit of stuff there, but not most of the time stuff, like the 40 and all that stuff. But my understanding was at least one other Boilermaker really stood out last week, and that was Cam Allen, yes?
Yeah, Cam looked pretty good. Ran pretty well on last Thursday, then produced pro day. Not the strongest guy, but that was no shock. But, Cam may have helped himself a little bit. Jared, I do think, though, he's probably still a free agent at best. We all saw the issues he had with tackling in the open field. It seemed like time and again he would miss tackles, miss assignments. And then he would, turn around and make some big plays, though, too, Jared. Remember all the interceptions he had. But, again, he's got a lot to prove, but his best hope maybe just to get into camp as a free agent and then maybe try to impress somebody from there. I think the one guy outside of Tyrone Tracy that may have the best shot to get picked is Sanusi Kane. And even he's probably a long shot, to be honest with you, Jared. But Sanusi's got some physical traits going for him. He did okay on Thursday. I think he's a guy you got to watch play on tape. He's a leader. He's smart. He's savvy in the back end. And, again, he's a guy that looks better on tape than he does in shorts and a tank top working out on a field in March.
And some guys are like that. So pro day wrapped up. Spring ball right around the corner here, Tom. There's been a lot of staffing, like minor staff. I shouldn't say minor staff role, because I don't think there's anything that's ever minor about what you got to do when you're talking about Power 5 football. But I guess these are things that you see. They're off the field. They're away. We're not talking tight end coach or wide receiver coach. These are more of some of those next-level jobs that are support roles, on-campus recruiting stuff. Talk a little bit about what's been going on with that, because it seemed like there was a lot of movement with those parts during the offseason.
Yeah, pretty natural stuff. I think every program is going to have its share of movement every offseason. And for Purdue, they've had a little bit. Now, as far as the main staff goes, Jared, not a lot has changed there. They did lose their tight ends coach, Seth Dagey. Of course, he went to Marshall to be the offensive coordinator. That was the biggest move. And then Purdue sort of countered by kind of making the special teams coach, Chris Petrelli, a full-time assistant. He was just an analyst last year, so he became a full-time assistant. Then Purdue sort of gave the tight ends job to Justin Sins, who will be in an analyst role. That's really how they shuffled their staff, and then Dagey left. And what's sort of gone on from there, as you said, have been more support staff, more ancillary-type positions that Purdue's been dealing with at this point. They hired another athletic trainer for the football program. This would be the third in 3 years. A.J. Van Valkenburg coming in from Stephen F. Austin State down in Texas. Hired somebody to work in the recruiting office as director of on-campus recruiting. Gave the director of football ops an assistant to help him in his job as well. And they just hired, of course, another analyst just the other day to work with the wide receiver. So, the movement has continued. And I tell you what, this Jason Simmons that they hired from Miami of Ohio to be an analyst to work with receivers has deep roots in the state of Indiana, Jared. 23 years coaching in this state, been a head coach at Ben Davis in Noblesville. And it's hoped that he can maybe help Purdue's recruiting efforts in-state going forward as well as working with these wide receivers.
I don't recall a lot of worrying about analysts during the previous administration, so to speak, here. Is this kind of a new phenomenon here with Purdue, getting more of these type of guys in analyst roles? Is that a product of Coach Walters? Is that something that's natural? Kind of walk me through that.
It's more something that's come out of the Ryan Walters era, something Jeff Brohm never really had a lot of. He had maybe one or two analysts. Now Walters has, I think, an analyst for every position. So, just really honestly, Jared, getting Purdue's staff up to where it should be with peer institutions in the Big Ten. You know, every staff at this level has a multitude of analysts that sort of, you know, they can't really coach or they can't recruit off campus, but they can coach during practices. And just help develop the roster. So it's just been a natural evolution of the sport over the years. Now you've got not just assistant coaches, but you've got analysts, Jared, on top of the GAs, too, that also help out. So these coaching staffs have just become monstrosities in recent years.
We're talking with Tom Deanhart, GoldenBlack.com, here on the Blue Fox Heating, Cooling, Hammerhead Hotline. We're past the one-year mark here, right? We're getting ready for spring ball year two, Coach Ryan Walters. I don't know when I'm assuming you probably talked to him on Thursday from the pro day and stuff. I don't know when the last time you really got to sit down with him, but tell me from your talks with him recently, how much do you feel like he's changed from when you got that initial meet and you saw him through, you know, that December, January, February, getting ready for spring ball's first year versus what you're seeing out of him now?
I was in his office about 2 weeks ago talking to him for some stuff, and I'll have a story I'm going to post tomorrow, sort of looking ahead to spring football. Jared, he just feels more comfortable in the role. You know, he was a first-time head coach this last year. I think he was, 36 years old. So sort of trying to find his way into this new level of profession. And, again, he talked about that, more familiarity with the roster and, again, more comfort in what he's doing. And he's been able to flip the roster even more, Jared. Maybe the most important thing he's done. You know, last year, he got in late, and was pretty limited too from a resource standpoint as far as being able to really try to get players out of the portal. And this year, that's been a total 180. The Boilermaker Alliance is really being able to help build this roster by adding some good players out of the portal. And Ryan Walters knows that, and he hopes that we reach dividends here, Jared. They got 14 scholarship players out of the portal. They're all here now, and it's going to be a lot of fun watching these guys for the first time in full pads this spring work out, see what they look like. I'll tell you this, too. The two positions I think that have been impacted the most from the portal are the offensive line and the wide receiver unit. Those would be the two positions I would watch if I was a Purdue fan this spring to see how they develop.
And two positions we said going into the offseason that we were worried about the most, right, especially with the exodus of the wide receivers. You had to find some good bodies, and then, you know, that offensive line lacked that depth, and they had a few defections in there that, you know, we were worried about. So it really seems like he's addressed that in the portal, and You know, you talk about the Boilermaker Alliance. I know Golden Black, you guys do some stuff over there, and Coach has talked fondly about the Alliance and trying to, you know, strengthen that end. But when I heard those comments from him, it was concerning because I know you're an old head a little bit here where you remember the good old days. You see guys like Saban. I know Patino was out here talking about this, how they don't like this new era right now. It's changed what the kids prioritize. They don't like the free agency and all that stuff. And when I see that, you know, Coach Walters says, I got to spend more time developing this, I feel like that's less time away from developing your actual players. That is less time away, Lord forbid, your family as well. Do you get the sense that he is struggling with the time here at all, how you manage that? Because it is really a brave new world, and a lot of the older coaches just not only don't want to embrace it, I mean, they're downright starting to get out of it. I can't imagine that's going to be good for college athletics as a whole going down the road. But how do you see him managing it? Is he doing a good job, you feel?
I think so, and he's fully embraced it. You know, you change or you perish in life. It's that simple. Not a big shock to see old coaches complain about change, right? Big shock there. And then it's what it is, man. If you don't like it, get out of it then, because that's the reality these coaches have to deal with. They're making $4, $5, $6 million a year, Jared. I think a lot's expected to be prepared that kind of money, and I think that they realize the good ones are smart. Brian Walters knows his job depends on getting talent. If he doesn't have good players, he's going to lose games, and he's going to lose his job. He'll flat out tell you that. He gets it, and that is where he has to put a lot of his focus, is on talent procurement. That's when it becomes vital that you build a good staff, because he can't be there 24/7 on the practice field. He's there, obviously, but the bulk of the coaching day-to-day is done by his assistants, and that's just how it has to be in this era. Now, we all know there's change coming as far as how these rosters will be managed in the future. These players are probably going to become employees at some point. Who knows? They're going to unionize. Maybe there'll be a salary cap. Guys will sign contracts. There won't be quite as much crazy free agency and player movement from year to year. There'll be more stability and structure to it. But that era is not here yet. It's still sort of the wild, wild west as far as player movement goes. And that's just the reality of it. I think, again, that's when it pays to have a guy who's younger like Ryan Walters who embraces this, embraces the challenges, and is trying to manage him the best he can. So I'd much rather have a guy like that than a little guy who's going to complain about the rules and then not embrace him and maybe see his program slip and slide a little bit.
Tom, one of your articles this week, too, speaking of the change that could possibly be coming, I know Ross Dellinger, Yahoo Sports, had that big article moving towards a new format where basically the Big Ten and SEC are like, hey, let's partner up, and why don't we, since, you know, it's the golden rule, whoever has the gold makes the rules, and it seems like they would like to keep it that way. What was your takeaway from that? And I feel like didn't we just go through this whole alliance thing, we're all going to stick together, and then quickly people were stabbed in the back, and we all went our own ways? I mean, I feel like I've seen this before, but, you know, what was your take on the Big Ten and the SEC allegedly just kind of partnering up to basically decide the future of collegiate sports?
I think they want to try to control how it's structured. They don't want Congress or anybody outside their realm setting the rules and then having to live by them. They want to be the ones who set the rules. So I think they want to try to be proactive here. Again, not let the government get involved or any other outside agencies get involved. So, again, not a shock. Like you said, they've got the gold. They're going to set the rules probably going forward here just because they're the biggest and the richest, right?
Yeah.
And they can always take their ball and go home and play with themselves as far as maybe having their own league, their own playoffs. So who knows where it's going, but I think they're leveraging all that power they have to try to get what they want while still keeping the Big 12 and the ACC and others involved. So, yeah, a lot of jockeying right now, a lot of hurt feelings. And some of the proposals the Big Ten and the SEC have laid out there so far is, you know, them wanting three automatic qualifiers in the playoff, wanting a larger share of the revenue from the college football playoff. Just a situation that if you're in the Big 12 or the ACC, that's not good for you. And it will be interesting to see where it goes, Jared. If the ACC ends up falling apart, which it may at some point here, you see Clemson and Florida State making a lot of noise right now, what will happen to the Big 12? So it's going to be a fascinating next few years in college football. It's not like there hasn't been enough drama already, right?
Well,
it's like every year there's some giant giant cataclysmic event.
Well, you know what stuck out to me this week, Tom, was more talk of this. Texas is the one that brought us the collective loophole, if I remember correctly. Now we're talking about maybe loopholes, private equity getting involved with collegiate athletics, which we all know when private equity touches something, usually it's the best for everybody involved. That sounds like another disaster. But this is just kind of where everything is going right now. Everybody's looking for these revenue streams, and it seems to be all about the money right now. And like I said, maybe some regulations come through, we get a handle on this, and it all settles down. But right now, it's, as you so eloquently put it, it is the wild, wild west.
Yeah, it'd be nice if there was some structure. They need a commissioner. They need a leader. Everybody's always out for themselves, which is bad. What's in it for me instead of the collective good of the sport?
Yeah,
and there's never any consensus, and that's what they really lack. Look at the NFL. I mean, they're all in it together, right?
If the
Dallas Cowboys, the New York Giants, all those teams, you know, they all split the TV revenue evenly, and Dallas should probably, truth be told, be making more money than the Minneapolis Colts or some of those small market teams like the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
But they want parity. They want competitiveness throughout the league, right? They want every team to know they really have a shot year to year to make the playoffs and get to the Super Bowl, and they do, right?
Well, except for the Panthers, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, college football, it's been an unbalanced playing field for years and years. It probably always will be, but it would just be nice if there was some uniformity, some structure across the entire sport. They all tried to work together for the better good of the sport instead of trying just to pile more money in the lap of two conferences in particular.
All right, Tom. So as we wrap this up here, we got spring ball coming up here. What are the dates to be watching for here? And give me one or two storylines here heading into spring ball that you're most intrigued by with Purdue.
Yeah, March 19th is coming Tuesday. They take the lid off the spring football. They're going to practice Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. They're going to go early in the morning on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 9 a.m. Friday, they're supposed to go at 5. All the practices are closed to the public. The media will have access on Tuesday and Thursday to watch a little bit of the practices and then come back later and do interviews. April 13th, a Saturday at noon, is going to be the spring game over in Ross-State Stadium. Of course, they didn't have a spring game last year. Didn't really have enough personnel to do it. So there'll be a spring game on April 13th. You know, as far as storylines go, I talked about the O-line, their wide receiving unit. I think those are going to be a couple big storylines. The continued development, I think, of Hudson Card in year two in the program is going to be fun to watch. And I think defensively, the secondary, a couple of new cornerbacks from the portal too, Jared Nyland Green from Georgia. I think he's going to be one of your starting cornerbacks. He may be the best player they got out of the portal this year. So watch Nyland Green. And I think those are probably some of the bigger storylines to really keep your eye on as they take the lid off spring drills here next week.
So excited for it. Can't wait for some pads to start popping again and get some spring football in. Tom, it's always a pleasure talking with you. We love reading you on Golden Black, buddy. So please keep up the good work, and we're going to get you back on again real soon. All right, bud?
Take care, Jerry. Be good, buddy.
Thank you, Tom. We always appreciate it. All right, we're going to take another break here. Hang tight. We'll come right back. The folks from Purdue Sports telling you about what's on campus this week for you to be able to go out and attend. Plus, we'll get back into those Big Ten end-of-season awards. Who got snubbed? Where'd we get it right? Where'd we get it wrong? That's next. It's the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer. Welcome back. It is the Hammer Down Show, 101.7 The Hammer, 101.7thehammer.com. We're back over to the Blue Fox Heating, Cooling, Hammerhead Hotline. We got Scott. We got Madison today. It's the folks over at Purdue Sports. We've got a busy couple of days coming up here towards the end of the week where you can go get out and check out a few little baseball, little softball and stuff, guys. It's great to have you out here. Let's get started with baseball. Luke Gaffney, absolute superstar, third Big Ten Freshman of the Week award in 4 weeks. So. Purdue baseball, absolute rolling. Weekend sweep over Albany, and you can get back out there again this week and watch them play, Scott, right?
That's right, yeah. We have a midweek matchup tomorrow at 4 p.m. against Northern Illinois, being that it's our first midweek matchup. Tickets and general admission seats are $3, along with some concession items.
Oh, yeah.
Weather is warming up. I think it's supposed to be a high of, like, 70 this
week.
Yeah. So, great baseball weather, and that leads us into the weekend with a home series against Samford with an M. That kicks off Friday at 4 p.m. There's a doubleheader on Saturday starting at 1, and we close out the series Sunday at 1 p.m. as well.
You know, there's no college named Sanford. That's you're thinking of Sanford and Sons. That was a TV show. But I get you, Sanford.
That's right. Sanford, not Stanford.
Oh, okay. All right, there you go. that makes sense. I thought you were going Sanford and Son for a second. I'm like, you're way too young to know what that is, man. But that's okay. That's cool. $3 midweek matchup on Wednesday. So you said $3 concession items. What are some of the things you get over the concession stand for $3?
Yeah, there's select items like nachos, popcorn, and select beer while supplies last.
$3 beer, $3 general admission, Purdue baseball. You don't want to miss it. You can get on out there this week. Can I just roll up to the box office? I can pick up tickets when I get to the game?
Yep, you can get them at Alexander Field, or you can purchase them online ahead of time at PurdueSports.com.
That's super simple. Okay, and then softball. Hey, we're off to a pretty solid start with softball. Coach Maggie's been doing a pretty solid job to get started here. Get on out to Biddinger for the first time this season here, Madison, and you can watch Purdue play. Tell me about what's on tap this week for Purdue softball at home.
Yeah, we're excited to have softball back at home to open up their 2024 home season. They'll be taking on Nebraska Omaha this weekend. That'll be Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Thursday, the game will be at 2 p.m., and we'll be giving away our schedule posters. And then Friday, also at 2 p.m., we'll have some fun games for fans, and we'll have bingo going on. So stop at the marketing table on your way in to pick up your bingo card. And winning cards can be turned back in for a prize courtesy of Purdue Athletics. And then Saturday, that game's at 12 p.m., and we'll be celebrating St. Patrick's Day a day early. So wear your green and come out and support the Boilermakers. And admission into Biddinger is free all season long.
And if I catch a leprechaun on Saturday out of the field, do I also get another prize from Purdue Sports?
You might find a pot of gold or something.
Oh, I love it. All right. So, get out there this weekend, Alexander, and over at Biddinger. They've got action for you. You're definitely going to want to check out both these teams. Pretty darn hot right now. So you want to get out there and have some fun, especially while the weather is still nice. And then don't forget, your football season tickets are still available, yes?
Correct.
All right. Make sure you pick them all up, PurdueSports.com. Guys, it's always a pleasure on Tuesday. Boiler up.
Boiler up.
Big thanks to those guys. Again, baseball and softball this weekend. Both those teams off to good starts. Get on out there, especially the weather being the way that it is right now, right? I think it's still going to be okay on Friday. That's going to be like 70 like it is like today and tomorrow, but I mean, it's still going to be pretty darn good. So I hope you get over there and enjoy it because reading Chad's weather blog, it sounds like it's going to get colder before it gets any warmer. Ugh, not looking forward to that. So yeah, we talked about the top of the show, Big Ten end of season awards, both coaches and media, they're pretty aligned on everything. And I think for the most part, they got it right. I mean, Boo Booey, Zach Edey, the only unanimous first team picks on both media and coaches. Terrence Shannon Jr., sure, I'm not going to die on that hill. I understand he missed some time, but come on. I mean, let's just... If I have to take all that stuff out and evaluate the player and the way they played in Big Ten play, yeah. It's the mask that I feel like got the shaft a little bit here. He makes first team on the coaches. And then does not make it on first team on the media. That went to Jameer Young instead. So they kind of flip-flopped. You know, Ware makes second team on the media, made third team on the coaches. And Dawson Garcia made second team on the media, third team on the coaches. And Coleman Hawkins gets honorable mention from the coaches, and then that's the weird one. He does that, and then he made third team on the media. But no Illinois players on the all Big Ten defensive team, and they had six players in there. Yeah, I think they got that right.
All Big Ten defensive team. I given it to Ace Baldwin Jr., the top defensive player. I'm all right with. You know, you selfishly would make a play for Zach Edey because of what he does and what he affects. So I think he definitely belongs on the team. If you want to argue about who, look, you love guys like Baldwin because of those, unless you're blocking like five shots a game, don't you love those kind of lockdown defenders on your best perimeter players? So yeah, I get that, right? And Baldwin led in steals. So I get that. I'm with that. I'm okay. Look, I think overall, like I said, and I told you this on Monday, that the guys that were probably going to get shafted the most were going to be Garcia and Tominaga. And yeah, because I think Dawson Garcia deserved to be second team from both these guys. Tominaga got second team from the coaches. And I don't think the media, where'd the media put him again? Because didn't the media give him a little bit of the shaft? Yeah, he got dropped down to third team on the media. I thought he deserved to be second team. Honestly, my first team was Shannon Jr., Bowie, Edey, Smith, and Damask. And then my second team was Jameer Young, Tyson Walker, Darson Garcia. And I thought Tominaga, but, you know, Storr got up there. I know he made a little bit of a late push, but he seems like chaos. Now, Bruce Thornton's another guy I feel like you could have made, and Ace Baldwin Jr. in on a second team type guy. It's not happening. But I think overall, and I'm not one of these Purdue people that's upset that he's Matt Painter sharing with Fred Hoiberg. I'm just glad that he got it. But Coach of the Year is one of these weird things. I'm like, we all got to get together and decide what the criteria is. Is the criteria, you were picked low and you vastly overperformed? Is it you just dominated? Because how far does the coaching job go in? Because you got to go out there and recruit the players, and then you got to develop the players, and then you got to have the good team. I thought Debo could have gotten assistant of the year. Not that Brantley does not deserve it, because he does. But yeah, the coach thing, it's always wild to me, because what are we doing here? Are we just taking guys that have exceeded our own expectations? Are we doing the people that, you know, are the top of the heap here? Because I know Matt Painter got the National Player of the Year back and he expected them to do good, but come on, look at what he took from you guys in your rankings and look what he's turned it into. He definitely deserved it. Definitely deserved it. All right, we're going to take our final break. We've got things we may have missed and more that are coming up next on the Hammer Down Show. Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com. I'm Jared Jessalitis as we wrap things up here on the Hammer Down Show. Great talk with Tom Dean, HeartGoldenBlack.com. And, you know, we talked about the ever-changing landscape that is college athletics, specifically football. And it's nice to have him in on a day where Nick Saban, the most recognizable figure in college football for quite some time and what was considered the standard, the bar, so to speak, testified before Congress, says one of the big reasons why he decided to leave was NIL, that kids no longer care about anything else except for how much playing time am I going to get, how much money am I going to make. But the secret truth to it, there's two ways to look at this, too. One, he is becoming of the age where, yes, you do settle down, you retire, you made a lot of money, that's it. He found a very good flashpoint to get out of the game. And he found a scapegoat in NIL. Because under the old ways, people like him, they benefited. Right? These other big schools with a lot of donor money that knew how to do it and get away with it. Now everybody can do it. Now a whole lot of people can come by and ask for those second-tier players and say, hey, you know, get what you want here. We can get you paid, too. Come on over here, and you get that playing time. And as Tom said, it's turned into the wild, wild west, and you have to either adapt or die. And that's what Ryan Walters has elected to do, adapt. While you and I, the fan, continue to complain about it, they will find ways to make it work because they have to. And that's the new reality until something settles in and they find a way to really control the chaos. I think that's what it'll end up coming down to. How do you control the chaos to somewhat level the playing field, much like they have in the NFL? How do you get a hold of that? And that may come sooner rather than later in the form of making these kids employees, and then conferences being able to establish salary caps and things like that. And that's what you're starting to see, I think, with the talks of the Big Ten and the SEC is how could that look? How can we do that? Because for everything that Nick Saban complained about, there is that one silver lining here. The one thing that he does have right here is, and the same thing Rick Pitino told, pardon my take, this, they all hate this. It's boiled down to these two things because deep down inside, they still do like to develop players, whether that's their own ego or just the selfishness of having to go and recruit your own players every year. You can't help but argue that maybe 4 years under Nick Saban is going to do more for you than jumping to three other schools over 4 years. And there is a point to that. That's going to do it for us here on the Hammer Down Show. Come on back. Tomorrow will be Wednesday. We're getting started with the Big Ten Tournament. Oh, it's going to be a furious rush into the weekend. I'm excited for it. Plus, the Boiler Basketball Show returns tomorrow for our last episode. You don't want to miss that. Tomorrow back here on the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer, 101.7thehammer.com. It all starts 3 p.m. I'll see you back here then.